As we move forward, I think these are all topics worthy of discussion.
Topics worthy of discussion.
Hey, they're all topics worthy of discussion. Let's get down to it. We have our panel today, and they are two. Joining us for the first time, Daniel Moulton is a consultant with Crestview Strategy, serving in senior positions in the Ontario government as an advisor to provincial ministers Sousa and Duncan. Daniel, good to have you on the Oakley Show.
Thanks so much, John. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Carlene Nation is back with us, media strategist at One Nation PR Group here in Toronto. How's Carlene?
Great day today, John. Happy to be here.
All right. You know, we were just talking about profiling when it comes to, and this is the story out of Regina, where an Indigenous man claims he was profiled. Therefore, he was accosted in a Canadian Tire store, accused of shoplifting and hustled out the store. The employee has since been fired because it looks like his account of things was, I just had to return to get something there. It was a miscommunication. The employee's gone, though, and it brings up, because some of the groups, Indigenous groups, are saying happens all the time. We're profiled when we go into stores. And I would submit to you that, and I wouldn't doubt or deny it, I just think a lot of people are profiled. It seems almost endemic to the shopping experience. Carlene Nation, as a Black woman, have you ever felt this?
Absolutely. Absolutely. To the point where I go into places, I'm very, very careful. You don't walk out accidentally with anything. When my son was much younger, I would warn him, be careful about what you do in stores. Always ensure that you're not putting anything in your pocket. Make sure you pay for everything, because you don't want that. They're watching you. Black people have complained about this time and time again, also Indigenous people. But in this instance, I can definitely agree with the Indigenous person. He had put the thing in a box, but he didn't walk out with it.
The chainsaw, right.
Yeah. So clearly, how can you accuse him of stealing something when he was still in the store? It was at the cash. He didn't walk out with something.
All right. So overreaction on the part of the
big time,
perhaps.
And he deserved to be, this employee deserved to be fired.
Okay. So the conclusion is it was prompted by profiling or stereotyping or some form of racism, discrimination, let's call it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you then, Daniel, if you're in the position of the shopkeeper, can you envision a point where, even despite the angels of your better nature, you might be a little leery of certain individuals?
Well, no, I think that I completely agree with Carlene on this one. I think this is a case that's pretty cut and dry in terms of the fact that we're looking at a shop attendant in this situation that wasn't just profiling, which I think draws into a much bigger conversation about race in our society.
Right. But my question has to do, project yourself as a shopkeeper. You got a shop. Let's just say it's a convenience store, maybe a hardware store, and it's not about really an identifiable group that comes in, unless we say a group of kids from the high school across the street wade into the store, 10 or 12 of them. Aren't you getting a little nervous?
Well, but I think that the actions here of the attendant at the Canadian Tire are really what's in question, right? I mean, he didn't this man. He roughed him up, right? He manhandled him, threw him out of the store.
Yeah.
And that's really the problem here. And that's really and I think that the question of profiling and who's profiled and sort of the actions of the shopkeeper in that regard open a much bigger conversation that's important to have. But in this case, we're talking pretty cut and dry. He shouldn't have manhandled him this way. He shouldn't have thrown him out of the store in the way he did.
Well, no, and
he didn't give him a chance to even have a side of the story told.
Now, look, it's of course, shopkeepers, storekeepers lose a lot of their income through theft.
Uh-huh.
My sister had a store downtown, and these things happened. But you've got to be careful about accusing someone of theft when it didn't happen.
Yeah,
it's not as if you put a bologna down your shirt and you're walking out of the store with it.
Well, right.
Or a chainsaw down your pants.
Well, hang on.
You know what
second.
I'm saying?
Yeah, no, but I mean, we're not in disagreement about that at all. That's already more or less been discussed, and we hammered it out just before you got here. I wanted to advance the idea, though, that there is profiling takes place, and perhaps it's legitimate in some instances. If a shopkeeper's getting ripped off and he has a store across from a high school, don't you think that would make him almost reflexively nervous every time a group of kids, teenagers come in, or they're looking a certain way? is that just a natural inclination to respond that way?
You know, it may be, John, and it might be, you know, the reaction that some shopkeepers would have, but it doesn't give you a license to treat people in the way that this man in particular in Regina
I've moved on beyond this guy because that's already settled. We figured that out. That's a done deal. This guy was treated improperly.
They're going to look at everybody, but sometimes they look at different groups even more aggressively.
Well, okay.
And that's the point.
Well, all right. I was just trying to expand the context to say that this kind of profiling, while it does exist, I'm sure, with Indigenous peoples and Black folks and visible minorities, marginalized types, I think you can even broaden the context to include rowdy teenagers.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. Now, is that impulse or instinct, though, where the rowdy teenagers are concerned? Is that somehow inappropriate? We should say, you can't profile these. These are good kids, potentially.
Well, John, I think that there's a different conversation here, that you're lumping in rowdy teenagers in the convenience store next to the school with racial profiling.
Right? No, I'm not. I mean, I've separated the two. I've moved on from the racial profiling one because I think that that's already pretty much case closed. We already understand this guy crossed the line for which he lost his job. We think it's an outrage. Although I do submit, and I had a conversation just before you guys joined us, young Black man had said he feels that sting of being cast into disrepute as a suspect just by virtue of walking into a store.
Sure, exactly.
So what is that about? Where is that derived from?
It's just...
Is that racism?
In undercurrent racism at times, the way he might have been treated inside the store. There's all kinds of different experiences that Black people in particular have complained about. A friend of mine walked into a store and she was treated so terribly. The person behind her, in front of her rather, was treated differently from the way she was. So, I mean, it's how you treat a person who walks into the store and making assumptions about whether that person stole something or not.
Well, that's a good way of putting it, making assumptions. I guess that's what we do. We tend to make assumptions sometimes. Do we jump the gun in doing that, or is that something that for which... you can forgive a person for making assumptions?
Well, I think if you're a store owner, you have to have a security, experienced security who can make good, wise decisions, observe everything, but don't attack people who haven't stole anything.
All right. Well, just wondering. Just wanted to challenge some maybe preconceptions or presumptions. Want to come back and talk about this drug epidemic that's claiming lives in the city of Toronto, and the cops are talking about fentanyl-laced heroin. That's been suspected in 4 overdose deaths since Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
And should we care? Should we be concerned? If folks who are living on that side of the street and involved in the drug culture are killing themselves, we'll discuss in a moment again with Daniel Moulton and Carlene Nation here on The Oakley Show, Talk Radio, AM 640. Let's get back into it. Topics on the table. This one we touched on very, very briefly on Friday when the first announcements of some deaths attributed to fentanyl-laced heroin, or so it was suspected. It seems now the police are suggesting as much in the wake of 4 such deaths since last Thursday, primarily in the downtown, in the downtown core. Daniel Moulton, let me ask you, I mean, there's a school of thought that says, hey, why should we care if druggies are killing themselves? Should we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a public health crisis, and certainly we've seen all levels of government starting to pay very close attention to it. These are real tragedies for real families, and I think that dismissing this as something that's just junkies and we shouldn't care about it is the sort of terrible inhuman response. You know, we're talking about 1,000 people in British Columbia that died last year, and I know that earlier this spring it was reported there were nearly 2 people a day in Ontario with fentanyl related deaths. And so I think it's something that all levels of government need to really put their focus on, and this is a public health crisis that we need to draw attention to as a society.
I thought it was somewhat ironic in the Rolling Stone cover piece on Justin Trudeau from last week. The article went on to extol the virtues of his approach to things versus the Trump administration when it comes to an opioid crisis. I think the author may have forgotten about the downtown east side of Vancouver, but that's just my little aside because the guy is actually going to live there with his Canadian wife. But do we need to do more to address this, Carlene Nation? Or, as I say, a laissez-faire attitude in some quarters, I've heard it said, like, hey, it's almost like that scene in The Godfather. You know, these people are animals anyway. Who cares if they kill themselves? Remember that when they were having that roundtable discussion?
Yes, I remember. But, you know, we can't just say it's just happening to street people who are killing themselves right now. I think that's pretty apparent. But
well, it's the heroin. The heroin is laced with fentanyl. That,
yes.
You know, probably from offshore, and there's no quality control in this matter.
So the thing is, it will eventually move into, like, schools. If it hasn't gotten there yet, it will get there. It is a problem. We have to pay attention to it. What I don't understand is we're reacting to all of this, or the government is reacting to all of this. Instead, I'm not hearing any strategies on clamping down on the sources of this drug flooding into the system. Where is it coming from? What are they going to do about it? Yes, it's a health crisis. Yes, we've had 4 deaths so far here in Toronto. The last thing, the only solution we seem to get from, say, the city and the province would be to set up yet another drug site or injection site to deal with stuff. But
so this is a harm reduction strategy. Well, let me just pivot over.
But we're not hearing that. What are they going to do,
Daniel,
in terms
do you
of stop stemming this?
Well, that's a good question. And right now it's almost a rhetorical. Well, what to do? Harm reduction strategy? Is that the best approach to this?
Well, I don't think it's an easy question to solve when it comes to the epidemic of drugs in this province, in certain parts of this province in particular, where opioids are another part of this conversation that while they have certainly seen some reduction in opioid-related deaths and an increase in fentanyl, let's not lose sight of a bigger conversation about drug use in the province and its connection with poverty in many parts of the province. And so I think that we're certainly seeing governments start turning their attention towards it. I know I saw some stories earlier this year about a lack of data that we really have in the healthcare system around these deaths. And so I trust that our provincial leaders and municipal leaders across the province are turning their attention towards better data, public health campaigns around drug use.
All right. Well, when you talk about better data, I'm kind of curious. Let me just get and sort of drill down on that a little. You talked about poverty reduction being tied into opioid use. I mean, is there empirical data that supports the notion that these people who are abusing opioids are victims of the opioid crisis are in fact languishing on the margins?
Well, I think that's the exact sort of thing that we need governments to be focused on understanding. And we certainly don't have enough research happening in that area to better understand the solutions to tackling these problems. There are enormous impacts on a lot of communities. I'm from southwestern Ontario. I grew up in Woodstock, Ontario. There are significant problems with opioid use in those communities. And we don't really have the information necessary to help address these challenges and develop solutions to these problems.
Here's
and
solution.
So I think we need governments to focus on, what are those data points that we need to be
better. All right. Well, you know what? I mean, I sound glib when I say this, but here's a solution. You know, they don't have this issue in Singapore. Why is that? Because it's pretty heavy interdiction. That's penalty. I mean, I'm not advocating that, but I'm just saying there's a sliding scale of a penalty that makes it so prohibitive to want to even think in this term. I mean, I'm guessing a lot of the stuff's being trafficked by organized criminals offshore. Or they're working in concert with. I mean, this is why the stuff, there's no quality control on these opioids.
No, clearly not.
And they're coming in manufactured, I don't know, in bathtubs in China or somewhere.
Our governments seem to be reacting all the time
to
these
things.
Okay,
so what would a proactive approach then be?
The proactive approach, A, would be, I think, launching a full-scale media campaign that this stuff will kill you. Well, kill you hardcore.
Aren't people pretty familiar with that, though?
Not everybody. No, I don't think so. And we're going to see more people dropping. But the other thing is, why isn't there a more concerted effort to clamp down on criminal gangs bringing these pills into our cities, into our province? I mean, the government...
Well, what does that mean, then? What does that mean in terms of sentencing, more resources dedicated to...
More resources dedicated to combating this stuff coming into our cities. I mean, why is that so hard for the city, our city officials, our provincial officials
All right, Daniel,
to look at?
Would you support then like a task force committed strictly to the opioid crisis?
Why not?
Well, yeah, no, as I've said from the outset, I think we need all three levels of government working together here on this one. I know that it's something that our leaders are frequently questioned about, especially when we see these media stories spiking out. And so, yeah, I think that, some focused action is exactly what we need, them working together. And certainly we need better public education campaigns around drug use in our communities.
Okay,
that's certainly a big part of the problem.
Resources meaning more policing?
They're not the provincial government and the city government. They're not taking this seriously enough.
How can
they're
you not take it seriously? I mean,
but they're not.
What are
they're
they doing
not.
Out
they're,
in BC? I mean, they've got 1,000 deaths attributed to overdose of opioids.
We've
last
only
year.
Had four, so nothing's
well, that was
happening.
Since Thursday. No, that's just since Thursday. So yep. In the span of 4 days, you got four deaths. That's by my count, about 360 a year.
I'm saying that. It's time now for the provincial government and the city government to sit down and say, we need to clamp down on this. Where's this stuff coming from?
All right. Well, let's see if they actually do find the political will to say it's a serious social health concern or a scourge on our society and do something that's proactive to abate these things. Want to talk about a petition that the Ontario Civil Liberties Association has actually launched online against a one-time mayoral candidate in Mississauga who he claims he's being politically targeted for some of the things that he said that are really rankled certain people of an identifiable community. I wanted to speak to that issue in just a moment with our panel this afternoon, Daniel Moulton and Carlene Nation. Always topics worthy of discussion. That's our segment right now with our panel. Carlene Nation, media strategist at One Nation PR Group here in Toronto, and Daniel Moulton, who's a consultant with Crestview Strategy, serving in several senior legislative posts, advising Provincial Ministers Sousa and Duncan. Never Yasser Naqvi, though, right?
No.
Okay, well, because Yasser Naqvi, as the Attorney General, had been consulted with the by the Peel Regional Police when it comes to this guy, Kevin Johnston, who one time ran for mayor, but he's been known as somewhat of a boat rocker on social media. And to the extent that he's written blogs about the Muslim community and Muslim students praying in schools, even offered $1,000 for anyone who could provide some YouTube evidence of something toxic or antisocial being said in some of the sermons there or the lessons. And this drew enough attention, I guess, and complaints that the Peel Regional Police, in aggregate, they cited some other things but weren't specific, to have him charged, but they needed to go to the AG, Yasser Naqvi, to ask him if they could lay charges. And they did for willfully spreading harmful news. Well, it turns out now the Ontario Civil Liberties Association is asking the AG to overturn that decision, reverse it, because they think that this is too extraordinary a step that doesn't merit this kind of a sledgehammer when it's a complaint against a guy who's just got an opinion that may seem odious, but that's all it is. It's his opinion. Daniel, let me ask you as a lead, do we need to resist the urge to charge people here with this Criminal Code 319 section hate crimes legislation when they're just offering up what I said might be odious opinion? Is that the right response?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think this is the right response. I mean, this demonstrates quite clearly that there are consequences to spewing the kind of hate that this man is accused of spewing. It's not just
hate?
Odious. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at the quotes, the things that he said online, the blogs that he's posted. They're not just comments or just blog posts about the Muslim community in Canada. It's quite targeted hatred. And I think what we're seeing here is police, using their authority to say that there are consequences for inciting violence and hatred against people. I mean, he said he encouraged. Said that he would be have a big fat smile on his face, quote, if someone shot the Muslim MP in his community. I mean, that's the exact sort of thing that we should be looking to stop in our society. And I think that the police are using their authority quite correctly in this case to demonstrate that when you go out there and you encourage violence or you incite hate against a specific minority community, there's going to be consequences for it.
All right. So the Ontario Civil Liberties Association is offside in suggesting that he has not really specified any individuals. You're saying it's his local MP. He is actually being very specific about targeting here.
Well, I know that was one of the videos that he had posted on his platform online. I'm not sure. I don't think that the police have been very clear about the Mississauga police have said exactly what they what they've charged him specifically for. I'm sure that'll come out in due course. But once again, this is important. It's important for folks to understand that there are consequences for targeting hatred like this.
All right. And you're right. I would wish that they'd be a little more specific, because when it leaves, it leaves a credibility issue there that the cops, are they overreacting? Is it overreach? What cite the very, very specific nature of the crime. Otherwise, it's starting to seem, you know, third worldish and even kangaroo courtish. Let me ask you, though, Carlene Nation, when the Ontario Civil Liberties Association and their free speech absolutists, they think, you know, unless you're really, really targeting an individual, do we need a law to really come down like a ton of bricks on this dude?
You know what? The problem is we still haven't got all the details about why this man was charged. We know he's made some odious comments and comments that Muslim Canadians felt very threatened by. Is it hate speech? Did he call for the killing of all Muslims? My point is this.
I didn't get that anywhere.
No, I have an issue with this because I think we have a provincial government, the Kathleen Wynne government, that has introduced prayers in the schools, a secular school system. Many Ontarians, many Canadians oppose this. I believe you can oppose it without threatening other groups and using language that threatens, say, the Muslim Canadian community.
Okay, but Daniel, so, to the points that he made, does that, in your mind, constitute direct incitement of violence towards an identifiable
group or
person?
Unless he said that, unless he said so clearly, how can you charge him with a hate crime? How do you do that? So what needs to happen
here? Well, I just wanted to clarify.
Because this case was so high profile and so significant, all the details of what he's being charged with should have been made public.
All right. Well, again, the idea that the attorney general would weigh in and give his consent to proceeding on the charges.
And he should have made it clear why he made that decision. Is it to politically shut up this guy for criticizing the Wynne Liberal? For when liberals for introducing prayers in school in a secular school system, that's the broader issue here.
Well, okay,
that's a pretty heavy accusation to throw out there.
No, it's not an accusation.
And I know that the Civil Liberties Association are suggesting that this is politically motivated, which I think is a bit rich. I think it's a bit of a case of trying to wiggle their way or wiggle this guy out of the rightful charges that are being brought against him. And I think in due course. The police will be more specific as to which posts on the social media platforms were used to convey this.
I think they should have made that clear.
Accused him of?
They should have made it clear right from the top so that everybody knows why he's being charged with a hate crime. It's heavy duty to charge someone with a hate crime versus free speech. We have free speech and we have a hate crime. Why was he charged? Why not make it public? Why not put it out there so everybody can see what he's being charged with? I find that to be a problem.
Well, look, I'm not the Mississauga police. I didn't choose to lay this charge against him. But I encourage listeners, check out this guy's website. I don't think it'd be very hard to find a message of hate there. It's almost immediately available when you log onto his social platform.
All right, for their point, the Ontario Civil Liberties Association has this petition that's going out, or it's online anyway. They say that instead of jailing this individual, the government should allow these matters to be resolved through public debate. That's why we bring it up here. It's public debate. I appreciate you coming in. Moved along very quickly. Daniel Moulton, again, consultant with Crestview Strategy. Carlene Nation, media strategist at One Nation PR Group. Thank you to you both.
Topics worthy of discussion.